We can't begin to go through all the stuff that's in Amos, as always, with a fast trek through the Old Testament. But notes are online if you want them for the details. But again, an overall look, like a general picture like we've been getting. Nothing in there. There's nothing in there to us. Nothing. I mean, it's just not there to us. And I don't know why anybody would tend to think there is. Now, God's judgment is serious. This is a book to read that if you want to learn about God's judgment, this is serious. And a little spitty little hurricane down in New Orleans, or a couple earthquakes, or a couple thousand people dying is not God's judgment. At least not when you want to look at examples of God's judgment. Amos chapter 4, verse 12 is a good series of verses to look at to start this thing off here this morning. Amos 4, verse 12. Therefore, thus will I do unto thee, O Israel, and because I will do this unto thee, prepare to meet thy God, O Israel. For lo, he that formeth the mountains and createth the wind, and declareth unto man what is his thought, that maketh the morning darkness, and treadeth upon the high places of the earth, the Lord, the God of hosts, is his name. And that little phrase there, prepare to meet thy God, O Israel, that's got a ring of importance to it, doesn't it? Poor Sue. She's sick. That's no good. Did you allow this to take place? Or losing control, Lewis. Losing control. The elephant visited and you kind of went out the back door for a couple minutes. Okay. To prepare to meet thy God, O Israel. You know, we'll meet our God someday. You know? And they had prophets in their day to tell them what God said. We have a Bible. And it's really getting to be amazing how mixed up and confusing teachings are coming out of the Bible. So what is it that makes this Bible so easy to understand? Because what kind of a God would make his teachings confusing? What kind of a parent would make their parenting confusing? Well, we're not a holy, perfect parent, but God is a holy, perfect God. And obviously, he would give us his word as we see here in this Bible. So rightly dividing is really the key. Eliminates denominations, even eliminates the Baptists and all the different kinds of Baptists. And what are you going to do when you finally meet your God? I mean, how prepared are you going to be? We should always ask ourselves that. We can meet our God today or tomorrow. Your kids can meet God anytime. It can happen to anybody. And it does happen to anybody. It does happen to everybody eventually, near as I can tell. So far, I think everybody that's been born has finally departed eventually. Nobody, LD, you're getting pretty, you're up there, but you're still here, you know. Yep. Well, go on to the sound. Okay. You can turn that camera off. That's part of the problem I have with the camera. Okay, Amos. Here's this Amos guy. Look at chapter 7, verse 14. Who is this Amos guy? This is another thought that some folks really have a hard time with today. And that's verse 14, where Amos says, Then answered Amos and said to Amaziah, I was no prophet, neither was I a prophet's son, but I was an herdman and a gatherer of sycamore fruit. And the Lord took me as I followed the flock, and the Lord said unto me, Go, prophesy unto my people Israel. Now this guy had no Bible education, no fantastic degree, no great calling of God as such. He was a sycamore gatherer, farming kind of a guy. And yet here's this guy that's going to tell Israel some serious things that God would have him tell him. And who are you? You're nobody. But we have a Bible. Anybody can read this Bible and figure things out, right and divided, following Paul. It just cleans up. We just don't want to get rid of our religion. Whether it be Baptist or Lutheran or Methodist or Calvinist Baptist or Reformed Baptist or Independent Baptist or Confused Baptist. I mean, you take your pick. And they cannot get rid of that stuff. They read this Bible with a slant, and then they get frustrated and they get mad about how things are going. But boy, when you meet your God, you're going to know, you want to know what it was he told you. I got a letter from a guy the other day that he said, well, yeah, we follow Paul, but we follow him balanced. I said, well, how do you do that? between the Gospels and the Old Testament and Revelation, all the tribulation books, and I got to thinking, okay, so we get a whole bunch of mail. You know the standard illustration about mail. So we get everybody's mail into a basket. Just bring all your bills into a basket. Let's put them in this one basket here, and then let's be balanced about it. Let's divide these things by how many people that are there. And you're going to get a couple, whoa, wait a minute, this isn't my bill. Oh, but we're being balanced here. We want to make sure we all have this thing just right. Well, that bill isn't to me. It doesn't matter. We want to be balanced with this thing. So how do you balance the book out? Very easily. You do what Paul teaches, and you understand the Gospels. You learn from the Gospels. You learn from the Old Testament. You learn from the tribulational books that are coming. Watching a series on World War. It's that public PBS series called The War, which, by the way, you have got that right. It's excellent. And it's not just about the war. It's about families in the war. Very, very, I guess, thoughtful, I suppose, whatever. And I'd like you to see it sometime, but it's quite lengthy. But it's teaching us things. Now, what went on in those days, we can learn from. But we don't have to worry about Japan coming over here to today. If we were to watch that thing and believe that thing the way it's presented to us today, we better hurry up and nuke Japan and Germany. But that's not today. But we can learn from the past and really realize where we're headed. It's quite interesting. So we can learn from that. So it's the same thing with Amos here. What are we going to get out of Amos? We don't have to fear God's judgment. Now, America does, but we don't. If we are saved, if we're saved. And how do you know that you're saved? Well, I just believe I am. That's not enough. What do the scriptures say? Can you back that up with scriptures? And young people tend to just not go with that. They just want to believe what they want to believe because, you know, until you're what? What did we decide last week? Danny's not here. Until you're 20, do you get back to being stupid like adults again? But until then, look at this book as a rightly divided final authority and throw out these teachings that you get. Read this thing and know what's to you. So what can we get out of Amos? Well, we get out of Amos right off the bat that he was no big highfalutin, big-time preacher guy. He was just a farm kind of a guy. No offense, I mean that. And we haven't got sycamore fruit, so you know, you're not quite as high as Amos was, whatever sycamore fruit is. I don't know. It's a tree, right? Do they? He's a nut farmer. Well, there you are. You're kind of doing some of that. No, I was thinking of nutty. No, that's different. That's a different thing. Yeah, there you go, yeah. And look at how God used him. Now, the word captivity, chapter 1, verse 5, chapter 1, verse 6, verse 9, verse 15, chapter 5, verse 5, verse 27, chapter 6, verse 7, chapter 10, verse 9, chapter 17, verse 9, chapter 9, verse 4, and 14. So if you get a chance, look those things up. That seems to be the main theme through Amos, is captivity. And that's not, from what I understand, a captivity. Never been there. Jimmy, have you ever been there? Captivity? Yeah, been in jail?
Nope.
Okay. I'm thinking, don't get into this thing, and then, you know. I have no desire to be in captivity as such. So, well, let's just skip Amos. Don't have to worry about Amos then. Now, there's some pretty neat things in Amos. Look at chapter 1, verse 1. Now, again, you have to have read Amos. We're just going to summarize this thing here, but, yeah. Thank you. We have one up there. We don't do it. Forget about that. Chapter 1, verse 1. The words of Amos, who was among the herdmen of Tekoa, which he saw concerning Israel in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, 2 years before the earthquake. And that thing about the earthquake has been kind of interesting to look up. Seems to have been quite a heavy-duty earthquake. Let's go to Zechariah 14. Now, according to the scholars, Zechariah is a couple hundred years later. For what it's worth, and it's talking here about the Lord's return, second coming, as we would call it, as compared to the rapture. We know this isn't true because the rapture is not going to stand anywhere. It's going to be up in the clouds. Zechariah 14, verse 4. And his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives. We know who that's talking about here, which is before Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof, toward the east and toward the west. And there shall be a very great valley, and half of the mountain shall be moved toward the north, and half of it toward the south. That's interesting. That's quite a jolt. But anyway, and ye shall flee to the valley of the mountains, for the valley of the mountain shall reach into Azai, or Azel. Yea, ye shall flee like as ye fled from before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. So this is a couple of hundred years later, and they're still talking about this earthquake, apparently, using it for an example. So it was quite the deal. Look at 2 Chronicles chapter 26. Here's a classic example of why we don't go back to the Old Testament to us. We go back to it for us, but we don't go back to it. 2 Chronicles chapter 26. The scholars tend to think that this earthquake took place the same time Uzziah was hit with leprosy. Now, do you remember the story of Uzziah? I don't remember we talking about this. I thought we'd go back to this for the kids, if nothing else. Chapter 26, verse 16. Uzziah, who was doing well, suddenly went bad. Verse 16, but when he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction. Have we ever gotten so prideful that we deserve a good smack from God? Well, don't ever think that we do, because here's what happened to Uzziah. His heart was lifted up to his destruction. For he transgressed against the Lord his God and went into the temple of the Lord to burn incense upon the altar of incense. And Azariah the priest went in after him, and with him fourscore priests of the Lord were valiant men. And they withstood Uzziah the king and said unto him, it appertaineth not unto thee, Uzziah, to burn incense unto the Lord. You're not supposed to be the one to do this. But to the priests, the sons of Aaron, that are consecrated to burn incense, go out of the sanctuary, for thou hast trespassed, and neither shall it be for thine honor from the Lord God. Here's a good guy doing bad. He thought he was so good that he could go up and do this. In some ways, it's like a young person thinking they can tell their parents what's right or wrong, or tell somebody down on the street that they're going to go to hell, hand out tracts, and preach to people. I've never been comfortable with young people preaching to old people. Older people. Sorry, Aldi. And you see that on the streets. Little kids and the little boys being like daddy and doing that kind of stuff. And we run across people that are majorly prideful when we talk to them in the fair booths and all that stuff. And you can't show them the book. Here's what the book says. Can you see what the book says? Well, I really don't care. So here's what happened to a guy when God wanted to put it to him. Verse 19. Then Uzziah was wroth and had a censer in his hand to burn incense. And while he was wroth with the priest, the leprosy even rose up in his forehead before the priest in the house. Can you imagine this? You're talking with your teenager who's fighting you. Or you're talking with somebody in town who's prideful, or there's just something going on. There's nothing, and all of a sudden, leprosy just starts appearing. That's a spooky thing. And Azariah, the chief priest, and all the priests looked upon him, and behold, he was leprous in his forehead, and they thrust him out from thence. You betcha they would. I mean, get this guy out of the room here. Yea, himself fasted also to go out, because the Lord had smitten him. And Uzziah the king was a leper until the day of his death. Boy, I'll tell you what. This is what happens when his heart rose, was lifted up to his destruction. And that can happen to us easily. We won't get to leprosy, but our pride and our heart can lift us up to destruction if we're not careful. Let this book be the final authority, not your opinion. Now, let's go back to Amos again. That was a free sermon. We won't take an offering for that one, LD. Now, I guess the biggest thing that I'm able to see as I step back and look at Amos is we see that during this time, things were doing really well. Here is how it's stated in some notes, which is well written. Israel was in the high tide of prosperity. Now, let's see, America, we can just about get anything we want. Our homes are full of things that we can get, whether we have money for it or not. We're just, right? And we have debt, we can just have what we want. Right? I mean, you want it, you can go get it. Wouldn't you call that a high tide of prosperity? We're doing all right. Oh, okay. But extra bold in its idolatry. Oh, let's see here. Who do we worship? The Hollywood stars, the TV, the movie. I got a lot of worship in this country, but there sure doesn't seem to be worshiping God. But a lot of idolatry around here. Then it says it's reeking. I've never seen that word written out from anybody, reeking with moral rottenness. Well, look around the country. Yeah, it's pretty rotten out there morally. You don't want your kids to walk outside your door. You don't even want your kids inside your door if you got a TV or magazines or books or whatever. The moral rottenness in this world is within our doors. But it's okay. They were in their high tide of prosperity. They were getting what they wanted. Then it says also it was a land of swearing, stealing, injustice, oppression, robbery, adultery, and murder. I wonder if maybe Amos doesn't have an awful lot to do looking at America. It's just as a nation. America is nothing special. So really what you see here is you see this nobody guy, no offense, but this nobody farmer guy, who God tells him what to go out there and tell these people are having a great time, deep in prosperity, raising high in prosperity, and yet the place reeks, but they're having a great time. They probably had pretty nice houses and pretty nice chariots, I bet. Right, yeah. Probably had some really first-class firefighting equipment out here in the desert. But if they need it, they'll get it. Have you noticed that anything, any political place, anywhere, any office or government office, anywhere that if they need it, they just get it? Some of you noticed that our bus that came by yesterday? Friday. We had this guy visit, David McKay is his name, from Michigan. We all go back a long ways with him in the web church here. And he pulls up in this government Homeland Security bus that he's traveling back to Chicago or Philadelphia or somewhere, Pennsylvania. And the thing must have just cost a fortune. And it had immigration. What do I have on the side? Immigration authority or something like that?
And security.
And security? It was a jail bus. That's why I want you guys to see this, you know. And this thing was caged off, and it was just a marvelous bus. This is a very expensive bus. And he said as we drove around town, we thought we'd just kind of clear the streets for the evening. So look around here, anybody be offended at this? I don't think so. Okay. And he said that he was coming in our neighborhood out here, that a van full of certain folks were in this van, and he said as soon as they recognized the bus and the immigration thing, they all ducked down in the van. I don't know why that is. Probably thought they were going to get run over by this van or something. I don't know. But it had to just cost a fortune. And, you know, the government, if they need something, they just either they make the money, I don't mean earn it, I mean print it, or they just, that sounds an awful lot like us anymore. If we want a certain something or a certain sink or a certain fan or a light or a roof or something, we can just somehow kind of do it. But look at the, and we're happy down here in little old Tushy. We're not going to know who's going to bug us till the very end. I'm sure not on the Taliban's number one hit list, you know. Well,
I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, yeah, okay, I'm checking. So we can just go on and join our posterity. Yeah, I wish we could. And yet this whole country is just, we're going to be an Obama nation country here pretty soon. Oh, made her mad. See, you have the freedom in this country to just get up and get mad. Oh, okay. Yeah. It's amazing. An abomination. Obama. Did you get that? An abomination? That sounds pretty good. So anyway. So here's this Amos guy telling Israel, who's living kind of like we are apparently here, that, you know, boy, God is just unhappy with this. So he goes on and he tells us what God is going to do to these people. And it's interesting because in chapter 1 and 2, he doesn't even talk to Israel yet. He's actually talking to other nations. So suddenly we got a guy that's preaching here that God's judgment is going to come. And he talks to Damascus in chapter 1, verse 3, chapter 1, verse 6, Gaza, he tried 9, Tyrus, 11, Edom, 13, Ammon, chapter 2, verse 1, Moab, 2, verse 4, Judah. Then he finally gets to Israel in chapter 2, verse 6. I mean, all these people got some things to worry about. Chapter 1, verse 3, Damascus. Well, what's their problem? Well, it says, because they have threshed Gilead with threshing instruments of iron. I haven't taken this time to study why that would make God so mad, but it does not please God. Look at chapter 1, verse 6. What did they do wrong? They carried away captive the whole captivity to deliver them up to Edom. Okay, that's apparently a wrong thing. Verse 9, Tyrus. What's their problem? Well, they delivered up the whole captivity to Edom and remembered not their brotherly covenant. How about verse 11? Edom. Well, because he did pursue his brother with a sword, and did, which is not a good thing, a sister or brother, if you take a sword out and go after the enemy, we would understand. But it's not a good thing. Dad would probably be a little unhappy with that. Maybe. I'm glad you understand that. Well, God wasn't happy with it. Did pursue his brother with a sword, and did cast off all pity, and his anger did tear perpetually, and he kept his wrath forever. God would get him for that. Chapter 1, verse 13, Ammon, because they have ripped up the women with child of Gilead that they might enlarge their border. Wanting to get bigger was that kind of a thing. Chapter 2, verse 1, there's Moab. So what's this? Well, he burned the bones of the king of Edom into lime. I like that, into lime. You just picture the smell back there. Kind of like Mozart. Chapter 2, verse 4, Judah. Because they have despised the law of the Lord and have not kept his commandments, and we'll get more serious here. Have not kept his commandments, and their lies caused them to err after the which their fathers have walked. And then we got Israel. Verse 6. Okay, what did Israel do wrong? We'll look for the verse that talks about because they sold the righteous for silver. There's that money thing again. What have we sold so we can have what we want? Our souls? Your children's futures? And the poor for a pair of shoes that pant after the dust of the earth on the head of the poor and turn aside the way of the meek. And a man and his father will go in unto the same maid to profane my holy name. And they lay themselves down upon clothes laid to pledge by every altar. They drink the wine of the condemned in the house of their God. And that's what's happening. Look what's going on in our churches today. And maybe people don't see that. Maybe they haven't studied enough to look enough what's going on in churches. But there's some unholy things going on in churches, if you know what I mean by unholy. So there's judgment against all these people, not just Israel. Okay, let's see here. Chapter 3. Chapter 3 is exciting because it's just about how great they had it. The luxurious palaces of Samaria is titled in a study about it. Just to read through that thing, you see that they just used the poor people and they built the thing on, it says here, built their palaces on the backs of poor people. Let's see, what's going on in America today? We're becoming more and more poor as the government gets bigger and bigger. Rich people get richer, the poor get poorer. Middle class is disappearing. I think you could read Amos and you can see what God thinks of America. Really? And I hope that isn't what's taking place within our homes. Our home is it like that? You know, prosperity but worthless, prospering but worthless. Look at verse 7. By the way, Amos is speaking in a place called Bethel, which was what they called their religious center. He went right to Channel 12 where the big guys are at. Went right down to the downtown palace and just told him what he needed to say. But verse 7 I find very interesting of chapter, what chapter are we on? Chapter 3, verse 7? I think that's an interesting verse there. Surely the Lord God will do nothing. Doesn't it seem like God isn't doing anything to what's happening in America? Where is God at through all this stuff? But he revealeth his secret unto his servants, the prophets. So he tells people that are worth telling what's going on and what he's going to do. And when people say, you know, God, if God's judgment is Katrina, then he owes an apology. You've heard that. Then he owes an apology to Las Vegas and Chicago and stuff like that because he's not doing anything to them. Well, I have no doubt that God's judgment is not hit on America yet. But why not? We're having some vile people head running for office. See, I think Daniel said that was going to happen. So why would God stop that? So we think that God isn't doing anything. Look at Mom. God hasn't done anything about such and such. It can't be that wrong. Why not? So who does God tell what's going on and what he will do someday? Does he tell you? No, he tells his Bible. And this Bible, it's up to you whether you want to see what God says or not about what's going on. God is not going to not do nothing. He's going to do something here pretty soon. He's totally aware of the fact that your husband's a dog, or your wife is just a hard thing, and your kids are just worthless and rebellious. And he knows all about it. That's why Paul says, pray without ceasing. Pray without ceasing. But don't think God doesn't know. Because he knows. He'll just tell you in the scriptures what's going on. And he says, listen, relax, hang in there. What did he say the other day? Just wait for my son. He's coming. But until then, learn to please me. Learn to have a good testimony. Listen to Paul, because he's your apostle. He's the guy that we need to follow. Don't try to do Jesus' teaching by teaching. That's to the Jews. I can't expect you to do that, nor do I expect you to do that. Matter of fact, I'm going to judge you. I'm going to be the judge, but I'm going to do it based on Paul's gospel. So he told us exactly what we need to know. And it just amazes me, which you'll hear in the sermon this morning, why people reject this stuff. This is just amazing. They are so Baptisticated, or they're so religiously oriented, or taught, or whatever. Their brain has got them so wind that they're, hey, I know what I'm talking about. Well, the Bible's not right. Why do you think they changed the Bibles over the last 100 years? They didn't agree with it. So they change it. What do young people tell you want to do? I don't believe that. So what do? They change it. Well, they find a pastor or a youth program or something that they'll believe instead of what the Bible says. Then if mom and dad stick up for something in the Bible, maybe mom and dad don't stick up for it quite good enough, because who have we ever been, anybody here been to parent school? It's called grandpa and grandma. Yeah, we've been to parent school, haven't we? We know how we didn't do it, we know what we did wrong. And yet, get into the book. Let God show you. God will show you. You don't need somebody. Get into the book yourself. Don't be so lazy. Now, we'll look at chapter 4. Amos is a one-night read. You can read the whole thing one evening. Not a big deal. Just look at it like this is God's judgment on Israel and all these other people. And it's just not pretty. It's just not pretty at all. Now, I like this in verse 1 here, talking about cows and things. But as we get going into this thing, you see that verse 2, that there's some ladies that are going to be led away with hooks. And you see the posterity of the fish hooks. And you get into this chapter, and all I can think of today is, guys are just as guilty, in fact, more so guilty. What are they doing to little metal rings and hooks and earrings and things today? I mean, they're just hooking all over the place. You know? And you could just grab that little hook and you could just drag that person anywhere you wanted to take them. Grab them by that earring and the tongue there and ring them. And they'll never argue with you at all. Put a metal detector in the front of the door, the front door of your house, in case any of your friends, kids' friends come over, and they just suck them right against the wall. They got metal in them. And it's just, here we are. These people are being led about with hooks and fish hooks. Boy, girls and Sam and Austin. You ever want to see what a combine looks like while it's running inside? Come home one day with an ear little thing in your tongue, right? And girls? It's not going to happen, is it? Isn't that sad how those things change by the time they're older? They fight and rebel, and one of these days they just might come home that way. Why do they do that? Because it's fun? I can't imagine that it's fun. Just, and then hook it up. And how can you eat a hamburger with a ring in your tongue? I just can't imagine that. Place to hold the pickle, I guess. But they do it out of rebellion. They don't do it because they're wise. So just because we're teaching our kids today that it's stupid and wrong and we threaten them with their life and a combine and the whole thing, doesn't mean they won't do it. Scary thought. Don't you wish you could just, when you get home today, kind of touch the back of their head and go, stay as is. Right there. But you want to also have control that you can loosen it too. I don't like this anymore. Let's grow for a couple of days. Let's stop there for a while. Right? Hello? There we go. Just making sure you're live there. Look at verse 6, verse 8, verse 9, verse 10, verse 11 of chapter 4. See any phrase in there that's the same? Yet have you not returned unto me. I've done this, yet you have not returned unto me. Just quit preaching about our kids. Kids, you just have no idea what your parents have done for you. And yet, you go off and do your own thing someday. Well, I went out and I did such and such and such for you. Yet, my kids haven't come back. Oh, and I went and did such and such. What about us? What has God done for us? What has God done for us since we've learned about Paul and following Paul's teachings and King James Bible, rightly dividing and all this kind of stuff? Yeah, we don't feel that we're Baptists out of the church title now anymore, so we're official now. You know? Have we returned? Have you returned in your Bible reading yet? Or, wherever you want to go with that thing. That's a preachy thing. It's not written to us, but we can learn from that. Yet ye have not returned unto me, saith the Lord. When they get to 20, what happens? Maybe they'll start returning unto him. But anyway. But also in that same chapter, there's that verse 12. Oh boy. Prepare to meet thy God, O Israel. You know, it's kind of like sometimes kids are doing some things that they ought not, then they know when they're going to get home, you know, dad's going to hear about it. Prepare to meet your dad. Right, dads? Yep. Chapter 5. You do something stupid and you come home and your dad says, did you have a good evening? And he's never asked that before his whole life. You just know dad knows something's up. He knows exactly what went on. I don't know how parents figure this out, although I thought I had an eye back here when I was a parent, but apparently it wasn't. Because I found out later it was just a pretend eye. I thought I knew what was going on, but apparently I didn't. God knows exactly what's going on, boy. He knows. He knows you're hurt. Chapter 5. A lot of things in here. Let's see here. There's the lament over Israel messing up in the first couple of verses. They're unhappy about it. Well, of course. Look at chapter 5, verse 21. How are we doing for time? Okay. Again, there's so many notes online that I don't even really know how to put this together. I'm just showing you some specific things, and you can go from there. Amos chapter 5, verse 21. I despise your feast days, and I will not smell in your solemn assemblies. Though ye offer me burnt offerings and your meat offerings, I will not accept them. Neither will I regard the peace offerings of your fat beasts. Take thou away from me the noise of thy songs, for I will not hear the melody of thy vials. We see here an example where God quits listening, does not accept their sacrifices, does not accept their worship of him. Okay, so there's an Old Testament example. What can we learn from that? We can learn from the fact that God is God, and if he doesn't want to accept worship, and he doesn't like what he's hearing or seeing, then he doesn't like it. Yeah, but this is Old Testament. Well, look at Acts chapter 17. Acts chapter 17 is written to us, it's to Gentiles, this is stuff today. In Acts chapter 17, verse 22, when Paul is preaching to those guys on Mars Hill, they have no idea what they're doing, but they think they're worshiping God. And he says to them in verse 24, God made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is the Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands. So God is not in this building today, as he was in the Old Testament days. Neither is worship with men's hands, as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things. And we see in that verse right there that if we're going to worship God today with our hands, or we're going to build him something, we're going to play him something, or we're just going to put anything to do with this kind of a physical thing, he doesn't hear it today. It's a spiritual thing. So what have we got going on in our modern churches today? We've got this huge emphasis on worship. Worship team, worship leaders, come worship with us. And we see the Antichrist is using something from the Old Testament days that we can worship God, and he's building churches on worship. And God says to Paul, tell these people, hey, you can't do that today. It's a spiritual worship. It's between you and me. It's your heart and me. It's not some fancy show in a church anymore. So, yeah, we've seen an Old Testament example that God says, listen, I don't want to hear what I'm hearing. So what do we see today? We see the same thing going on. We've got posterity. We're filthy rich. There's vileness, and there's moral decay. There's reeking moral decay, it says there, going on in America. And these churches who think everything's going so well and wonderful, Baptist churches included, think that what they're doing is worshiping God. And we know from example in the Old Testament, and we know what Paul says to the guys at Mars Hill, they can't do that. God is not hearing us. So our kids need to learn, but they don't. grow up worshiping like everybody else is doing. Yes, but Dad, they're having a great time with those churches. They got their nice bands, and they're not terrible bands. They're up there playing their instruments and stuff, and everybody's swaying, having a good time. It's so much more fun to go there and all this kind of stuff, and they don't realize that it's wrong. But it seems so good. And look at all the people that are coming to church. Look at all the people coming to your church. Yeah, but what does God say about it? Know what God says about it. Don't worry about what somebody here says about it. Read the scriptures about that. He doesn't like it. He doesn't want it. It's not there. Look at verse 10. So somebody comes along and says things like that. Verse 10. Oops, go back to Amos. Sorry. Amos chapter 5, verse 10. Amos chapter 5, verse 10. Here's what happens to a pastor that preaches King James rightly divided, or to a parent who preaches King James rightly divided. Maybe the parents are preaching too much. Who knows? But come on, kids, get over it. Nobody's perfect. You get your day in court someday. But verse 10 says, they hate him that rebuketh in the gate, and they abhor him that speaketh uprightly. Abhor means really, really big time hate. You get to hate with a scowl. Ever had your kids look at you with a hatred, but then they scowl at you just before they duck? Right, Louie, just before they duck? I mean, ever seen that look from your kids? Jimmy, you ever get that from Shoney? Good. That's worth an extra round of dishes for that answer. They abhor him that speaketh uprightly. Well, okay, so I'm saying what I'm saying, and I know a lot of people get mad about that sort of a thing, but it's not about me. What about this book? This book speaks uprightly. Uprightly divided. This is a rightly divided Bible. It speaks everything the way it needs to be spoken. And what's going on in churches, Baptist churches included, they're really beginning to hate this book. They hate it so much they'll never admit it, but they just won't rightly divide it. They'll just do it their own little way. That's how they kind of shut down this Bible. So they hate the Bible. They abhor him that speaketh uprightly. That's amazing what's going on today. It's all right there. Let's see here. Look at verse 13 of chapter 5. This is good advice. It's not written to us. We can sure learn from these verses here. Therefore, the prudent. What's the prudent? It's the dad that sees evil and gets away from it. You're prudent. You're a prude. That's what you are. You think your dad's a prude? That's not a good answer. Two wrongs of dishes. Your dad better be a prude. Your dad will see. We're supposed to see something's not right and get away from it. And what do they say about you then? I'm not going to go do that. Oh, don't be such a prude. That's why you're trying to think, was my dad a prude? I mean, I don't want my dad to be a prude. That doesn't sound good. That's the right thing. It's okay to be a prude. If your dad's a prude, that's good. He sees something wrong, he doesn't go there. That's being a prude. Prudent. Okay. Go to school and say, my dad's a prude. That's okay. Caleb, you think your dad's a prude? Hey, your dad's a prude. Wow. What about that here? What do you think? Hey, Olivia, do you think Sam is a prude? Yeah, if Sam sees something wrong, either he turns the combine on high or he stares around it. That's what we're supposed to do. I hope you stay a prude, girls. I hope you're prude your whole life. All the way till the day you die. Then after you die, don't worry about it. It's funny how problems go away the day you die. Just, well, not necessarily. For some people, they're just beginning, right? Okay, therefore the prudent shall keep silence in that time, for it is an evil time. Sometimes it's good to just zip your lip. It's such a rotten thing going on that you just be quiet. Seek good and not evil, that you may live. Now, we don't need to worry about being killed, as God's judgment was in those days, but we sure can still ruin our lives. Seek good and not evil. Hate the evil, in verse 15, and love the good, and establish judgment in the gate. So hate evil, love good, and make some good calls, and we got to make some decisions of what's good and bad. Establish judgment. Become a what? Be prudish. It may be that the Lord of hosts will be gracious unto the remnant of Joseph. Well, kind of interesting stuff. Anyway, let's keep going here. Let's see here. Verse 18. Here we go. This, these verses, remember I told you about this kid at Whitman College years ago? He was jumping up and down, his long hair was flapping, and he was saying, I want to see, I'll talk to this God. I'll see him at the judgment thing, and I'll tell him a thing or two. Remember I talked about that guy? I hope he's got that figured out by now, you know. But anyway, here you go. Woe unto you that desire the day of the Lord. To what end is it for you? The day of the Lord is darkness and not light. As if a man did flee from a lion and a bear met him. Here's this guy that's just having a bad day. Okay. And I think about our days. Sometimes we try to escape something else. We don't want this, can't do this, and boom, you get hit, you know. You know? So here's a guy that flees from a lion and ran into a bear. Or went into the house and leaned his hand on the wall. He got hit by a serpent. You know, you just can't. You ever have any days you just can't win? This is what it'll be like when the Lord comes back. Shall not the day of the Lord be darkness and not light? Even very dark and no brightness in it. We picture dark. But has anybody ever been where it's like dark? There is just zero light? Dark. You go to bed at night, it's not dark. There's some lights out there somewhere. You got firebugs in your room or something. But I mean just dark. You've probably been where there's just dark, dark. Out forest and all that. Cave. Oh, man. That would just be horrible. You ever been to that place?
That's in the hallway of the one more clinic than the electric lights were off, you know. It took me up the upper stairs and there was absolutely no sound. That was outstanding.
And he says here, he doesn't just say darkness, he reminds us, and not light. Even very dark, it says, and no brightness in it. That's what it'll be like. Wow. I got dark stories, but I won't tell you. You need to quit here. We get into chapter 6. Got to look at chapter 6 real quick, like here. We got chapter 6 here. One of my favorite verses talking about music. Chapter 6, verse 1 says, woe to them that are at ease at Zion. How do we know that? Well, we're finding out here that God's people were just having everything they wanted, the right kind of furniture, the right kind of everything. In fact, down in verse 4, it talks about that lie upon beds of ivory and stretch themselves upon their couches. So, you know, we have the biblical example of a couch potato. So I know probably know that. Some people don't know that. You know that, girls? You know what a couch potato is? Really? It's somebody who just sits on the couch and watches TV the rest of their life. They can't get up. They come home, boom, couch. TV, boom, couch. Read, couch. Time to go to bed. Probably fall asleep on the couch. They get up, breakfast on the couch. I mean, that's a couch potato. You just can't get off the couch. Whoa. Oh. That was worth Kids are just so... I'm embarrassed over this one. I mean, I didn't mean to point it out, Scott. But you've been had, and Kaylin, you know what it's like in the dark when there's no light? I think you might find out pretty soon here. I mean, she even had to lean back past Grandma. Dad! So anyway, he says, woe to them that are at ease in Zion, verse 4, that lie upon beds of ivory and stretch themselves upon their couches and eat the lambs out of the flock and the calves out of the midst of the stall. At least they're not vegetarians. That's something for them there. And here's the big verse 5, that chant to the sound of the viol and invent to themselves instruments of music like David. And there's a verse of one of the things that these lazy, as we would, you know, address the lazy Christians, is music's a big deal to them. It is so much easier to turn on a CD and listen to the Marshalls or the Bunkles or the Rochesters, or I mean, I don't know who they are anymore today. It is so much easier to do that than open up your Bible and read that thing. Not knowing, of course, that you're being lied to in the songs, but you don't care because you like the melody. I mean, this is an amazing thing. And then what do the new Bibles do with that verse? It's very simple. They take out the comma and they add like David did. They just add one word, did. Well, if David did it, so could I. But see, David didn't do that. 1 Chronicles 23:5 says he did his instruments for God to be praised with. He didn't do them for himself. The music that we have is not supposed to be for ourselves. It's supposed to be good enough to praise him. It should be clean enough that we can rejoice and praise with it. But it's not worship. And if it's garbage, it just makes the devil happy. So there's a bunch of stuff there in Amos chapter 6. They had it so good, music was the end of their day. And I'll tell you what, I'll bet you most Christians today, young kids especially, they cannot do without their music. They cannot do without their music. Turn it off for a month. They die. Turn it off for a week and see if they can do it. I'll guarantee, I bet you they can't do it. They'll sneak a peek somewhere. They're addicted to music. They're addicted to Christian music. Just like in that day right there. Yeah, but Dad, that's not a vile I'm listening to. You know how kids are. Get the point. Then you get into chapter 8, and you got the ripe fruit that has this typology behind it. You get into chapter 9, and you see that he's talking there about that. But when the thing is all said and done, verse 11 to 15, he's going to bring it all back, and he's talking about the Lord coming back from the line of David and the whole thing. Marvelous little book.